gonna rock these shades, gonna scream my name, make you shout now, honey, gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist looking to take their career to the next level, or you're a fan that just loves to discover new artists and new original music, Making a Scene has exactly what you're looking for. For the indie artist, we have articles on music business, gear reviews, recording techniques, and interviews with industry professionals. For the fan, we introduce you to new artists every day with our in-depth artist interviews and insightful CD reviews. Nobody gives you more. Making a Scene truly is the number one resource for the indie artist and the fans that love them. Go to makingascene.org and become part of the indie revolution. And now, here's an indie blues double shot from our featured artist today, Zach Harmon. And stay tuned for that interview. It comes up right after these songs.
Love for you, baby. had to pawn my watch, I had to pawn my ring. I don't care what time it is, it don't mean a thing, 'cause I'm still a star. Long as I got my guitar, I lost all my money, and there went my friends. They didn't care for me, it was all pretend. But I'm still a star. Long as I got my guitar, cut off my cable and repossessed my car. Knocked on my door, I can't take it no more. But I'm still a star. Long as I got my guitar,
Zach Harmon from his brand new release, and we got Zach on the line right now. Hey, Zach, how you been?
I'm doing wonderful, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm, you know, trying to stay out of trouble. It's not one of my many talents, but I do put an effort in, you know?
That's wonderful. I'm right behind you.
There you go. Now, I know you have been on the show before, and you have this great history behind you. And I always like to give our fans an opportunity to really get to know an artist by their journey, their story. So give us the story of Zach Harmon.
Oh, let's see. I started playing music at a very young age. And I started on organ and went to violin and went to guitar and piano, which was kind of a natural. And I started playing professionally when I was around 16. I started playing with a gentleman by the name of Sam Myers. And I did that until I was 21, actually, and I left Mississippi and moved to Los Angeles and started playing in the local clubs there. And I did, writing and session work and that sort of thing. And of course, I still play the blues, you know. It's kind of natural for a guitar player. Guitar players all love the blues. In the late, actually the early 2000s is when I finally decided to record my first blues record. I'd played on a bunch of records, but never, you know, done anything for myself. So I recorded my first blues record. And I got hooked on it. I think we're about 8 CDs later now.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about this one here, the current release. What was your goal for this? What were you looking to achieve with this particular release?
Well, to be honest with you, this release is just a little bit different than any record I have ever done. 2020 was the year for the record books, and I'm sure we would all say the same thing.
Yeah.
And so I sat at home and hardly ever touched my guitar. Played a little piano because it's just so easy to just pick, sit at the piano and play. But it was a year of a lot of emotions. I lost my mother. I lost, oh my God, so many friends and so many family members. And so I just had all of these emotions, you know, and you know, my record label, Cat Food Records, was, you know, pretty much, you know, saying, hey, we need you to record a record. You're going to record a record. And of course, I kept putting it off. And finally, I agreed to do it. And I guess this record kind of reflects a lot of those emotions, you know. I put most of the songs on there with Bob Trenchard from the Rays, and you know, Bob had the same kind of year, you know, and so we were kind of seeing each other eye to eye because we both were in that space, you know. And so this record is a result of that.
Okay, well, let's talk about your process as a songwriter. When you sit down to begin writing for a new project, a new release, what do you do? What is your process that allows you to tap into the muse?
Well, I'm an emotional writer. So that's basically where I come from with writing. You know, it's all about emotions, you know. I'm one of these guys that if it's something that is directly related to me, or it could be directly related to you, because, see, you have to be careful if you tell me something that happened to you, because if it resonates with me, then here comes a song. So that's sort of my process, you know. I get this thing inside of me that will not let me relax unless I write the song, and that sort of lets everything out, you know. And so, you know, I'm constantly writing because I'm constantly being influenced by something.
Okay.
And that's the process.
Now, you know, writing lyrics is one part of the brain, but melody's a little different. You know, and every artist has their way of finding the melodies within the song. You know, some like to work strictly off a groove. Others like the chord structure. And then others just allow the lyrics to kind of dictate where the melody should go based on its natural rhythm and natural inflections. What do you use as your process or your mechanism to find melodies?
Well, it's the song itself dictates the melody. Because I'm like an old Baptist preacher, you know, and that song is like a sermon.
Right.
And so the melody is dictated by the words of the song, because I'm trying, my goal here is that my audience hears and feels what I was feeling with this song.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about the most dreaded moment for any songwriter is that moment where you have to put the pen down. What do you do to determine when a song is finished?
Whoa, that's a good one. That's a good one. Because the song is king.
Right.
And so the only way you know that a song is finished is that it's finished. I mean, I know that. Like, what are you talking about? But the thing about it is, when that song tells that story, whatever that story you're trying to relate, when that song tells that story, then you know it's finished.
Right. Now, having a good song gives you something to say, but creating that voice that not only gives that song life, but also the voice that identifies you as an artist is done in the studio. And every artist has their way of creating their sound, creating their voice. What is your process when you go into the studio that allows you to capture your sound?
Well, I guess that in a nutshell, you know, I've never considered myself good enough to be anybody else. So just by default is me. I mean, there, you know, some people that have come to hear me live might hear a cover song that I might do, and they say, "Oh my God, did you write that song?" And I'll go, "No, it's a cover song." But the thing about it is, everything I do it the way I do it.
Right.
So I would always joke folks and say, you know, I'm not good enough to be Albert King, you know. So if I do an Albert King song, it's gonna sound like a Zach Harmon song.
All right. Now, when you get in the studio, do you like to kind of just set up the band and just, you know, hit it and see what comes out? Or do you like to have more control and do you like to track it?
Well, back in the day, when I would record, I'd say back in the 80s and 90s, I did a lot of recording where I actually played all the instruments.
Mm-hmm.
That was fine for the styles of music that I was doing at that time, but not for the blues. The blues is so emotional. The blues is so earthy that it's a matter of having the different souls of all the players come together and create this new work. And so now what happens is, when we rehearse the songs in the studio, I will sing. Even when they're recording, I sing and they play. And we do it like that because the way I'm singing the song, the way I'm interpreting the song vocally, influences the way they play the song.
Okay.
So, that's, you know, it's funny how, you know, they say there's nothing new under the sun. It's funny how things go full circle. Back in the 80s and 90s, I thought it was like really, really something, you know, to record a track and actually play all the instruments on the track. You know, I was like, oh boy, you know, look at me, man. But in reality, that is really limiting the song because there's only one soul, you know?
Right.
It's my soul. So it's me. You don't get the opportunity to have the mixing of souls that creates the magic.
Oh, I agree. You know, you need that interaction between the musicians, that music in the moment
yes.
thing that happens
yeah.
in the studio, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the music industry as a whole. I mean, you've been around the industry for many years. You've seen it change over the years, especially over the last 20 years where, you know, the digital revolution really redefined the industry several times. And now we're at a point where the consumer now looks at, you know, streaming as a way to consume music. And it's really hurt the independent artists, I think, more than most of the industry, though everybody's hurting, because the consumer now does not look at recorded music as a product. It's now a service. It's available free. It's on their phone. They consume more, but they're paying less, you know, which is great for the consumer, but not so great for the artist. How are you negotiating this new world of, you know, of recorded music?
Well, believe it or not, I mean, it's been not so bad for me because, you know, most touring musicians, at least before COVID, you know, we sold CDs off the stage.
Right.
And that was actually pretty good. You know, you could sell CDs at a time of inspiration for people, and they wanted to have this music to take it home. But over the last 2 years, COVID has just kind of really messed everything up. I mean, you know, cars, they're making cars now with no CD players.
Right.
Okay, and that's in my opinion, that's the biggest blow to us. Because even if someone bought a CD, you know, they have nothing to play it on. You know, I mean, it's more than a notion to have a CD player installed in your car. You know, but you know, people are not thinking like that. They're not having CD players installed. You know, they will use a CD player if it's already there. But, you know, that was the biggest blow.
Well, they don't need one now. I mean, because they can hook up their phones directly to their car and just stream it.
Right.
You know?
That's right. That's right. Which, you know, to your point before, you know, streaming, this is what streaming has done. And I don't know. You know, it's not a great day for us. And I don't know what's going to come next.
Well, you know, it to me, I look at it, it's like a double-edged sword. Because even though we're losing revenue, we're gaining the ability to reach a wider swath of fans. Because, you know, people are not even listening to music the same anymore. You know, they pick their music based on them creating a soundtrack for whether it's an activity or a mood they're trying to create. And, you know, the whole idea of genre and, you know, even artists, you know, are not really taken into account. If the song fits into their soundtrack, that's what they'll listen to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
It gives,
right. Right.
You know, artists, you know, like blues artists especially, the opportunity to expand their fan base by getting people who would not normally listen to the blues listening to their music because it may fit their soundtrack.
Right.
You know?
Right. The only problem is, you know, when you have a CD, you have a product with liner notes and so
right.
forth. People get the opportunity to see who is doing what. With streaming, I'd say 7 out of 10 cases, people don't know who it is. They don't know who the artist is. They're listening to the music. That's it. So they don't know.
Well, you
now,
know, go ahead.
Time will tell. Time will tell if streaming, if what you're saying is true, And it serves to increase your fan base, then one would think that would be evident in live shows. But we have yet to see.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things I think COVID accelerated, let's put it that way, is when COVID hit, independent artists started to get onto the internet. They started to work their social media. They started creating content. you know, that wasn't necessarily directly related to their music, but related to them as people. They started creating their own content, whether through pictures or TikTok or whatever the case may be, and it allowed them to connect to their fans at a completely different level. And I honestly believe that in the future, the next platform that people are going to gravitate to is not going to be something like Spotify, where you just get the music without the liner notes, without that connection to the artist, and the artist cannot connect to the fan. It would be more of a digital bubble for each artist, which would contain the ability to connect to the artist, to see their content, to have the artist connect back to the fan. You know, give an example. David Grohl from the Foo Fighters started this, you know, drum off with this 11-year-old female drummer, and they would go back and forth on TikTok. You know, he would play this riff and on the drums, and then she would come and imitate that. And it got to the point that she and he invited her on stage at his concert to play a song with him. You know, these things are happening more and more. Actors are, you know, reacting to other people and how they feel about them. Other singers are listening to independent artists and reacting to them, you know, like Taylor Swift you know, Randy Travis and all them.
Right. Well, you know, I think that's all great. But I think that there is a certain, I mean, of course, it's not an absolute, but I think there's a certain age demographic where that type of thing actually benefits the musician. You know, for the older guys, and I'm going to say, you know, 60 plus guys that are doing boutique music, you know, like blues and jazz, you know, unless there is a, you know, a record company, you know, or some social media savvy person that's involved with them, then 9 times out of 10, they are not going to be able to take advantage of those opportunities that you say present themselves.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of, because I'm in that group. You know, I'm an old guy. You know, I'm 67. You know, I'm a baby boomer. I'm at the tail end of the baby boomer generation. And we grew up through that. You know, we had the advantages of, you know, the prior to computer world and then the computer world itself. And I think that we still have enough savvy that we can take advantage of that kind of technology, because we understand that whole world of branding, because that was how we were brought up, you know, TV and branding and all of that. So we understand that world. And that's really what it's, when you break it down, it's all a matter of branding, giving access, you know. I remember as a kid going to the Roy Rogers shows, you know, and just seeing Roy Rogers and Trigger and getting to get within 5 feet of them was a big deal, you know.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I agree with you. The only thing is that type of savvy does not translate across the spectrum of the business. I mean, many guys in the baby boomer, you know, in that group, never really had the benefit of all of the, you know, advantages of the computer age. And as a matter of fact, many of them are intimidated by it. And so, you know, for that particular group, you know, none of this works. But if you were fortunate enough to be exposed to all of the advantages of branding through social media and using a computer and so forth, then you're absolutely right. But I'm just saying, you know, there's a cross section of folks that they're not going to be able to do it.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the pandemic. I mean, it shut down touring for everyone. What were some of the things that you were doing that allowed you to stay connected to your fan during that time?
Well, I was doing exactly what you just talked about, you know, because I was fortunate enough to be computer savvy. And also I have sons that are of that young group, you know, that you know, I mean,
yeah, I know.
Anytime I got a computer or a phone or something, it was like, you know, okay, Dad, I'll take care of this for you. But I stayed connected by posting stuff. I just kept content. I kept feeding content, and most of it was not musical content. A lot of it was just family content and history, and you know, pictures with friends at festivals throughout the world and so forth, you know, and just kind of reminding everyone of the great times, you know. That's kind of what I did.
Okay. Now, let's talk about getting back to performing live again. The vaccines are out there. It's starting to get to the point where we're loosening up. There are some artists that are out there on tour. We're going into that, you know, that cold season now, and you know, people are going to start gravitating back to indoor venues. And what are some of the challenges that you're looking at right now that in getting back to live music? I mean, are you concerned about, you know, going into an indoor venue and not knowing who is and who is not vaccinated, or you're just having trouble finding venues that are still around to fill out the tour, you know, for those routing gigs? What are some of those challenges that you're facing right now?
Well, I'm actually only playing within a 100-mile radius of where I live. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm not doing any major touring. I had to fulfill some contracts that I had prior to COVID that, you know, they just postponed those festivals. And I did that. But the thing about it is I just had to come to a point and say to myself, you've done everything you can do. You've done everything you can do. You're vaccinated. You know, you're distancing. You're wearing a mask, you know, where it calls for wearing a mask. And you've done everything you can do. So everything else is in God's hands. So, you know, right now I know the one definite thing I know is that God put me on this earth to play music. And to be a part of that piece of humanity that soothes the spirit of a human being. And that's what he put me here for, so that's what I'm going to do. So I've done everything I can do, and everything else is in his hands. That's how I look at it.
Well, that's a great way to look at it. Well, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking with us. It's always a pleasure to have you on. And we're going to give everyone out there a double shot from your new release. You guys are going to love this. You know what? Turn it up loud. Open the windows. Screw the neighbors. We're going to have some fun tonight. Whether you're an independent artist looking to take their career to the next level, or you're a fan that just loves to discover new artists and new original music, Making a Scene has exactly what you're looking for. For the indie artist, we have articles on music business, gear reviews, recording techniques, and interviews with industry professionals. For the fan, we introduce you to new artists every day with our in-depth artist interviews and insightful CD reviews. Nobody gives you more. Making a Scene truly is the number one resource for the indie artist and the fans that love them. Go to makingascene.org and become part of the indie revolution.
Shout now, honey.